Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. The 2019 recruiting class is officially in the books after Wednesday, and the Oregon Ducks finish for the first time ever atop the Pac-12 conference standings, and for the first time ever, they finished with a top 10 recruiting class across all the recruiting sites. Rivals and 24/7 had them at number 7. ESPN had them at number 6. A fantastic job by the coaching staff. There wasn't a lot of drama, though. Oregon signed 22 during the early signing period, which has now overtaken the traditional signing period in early February as the big celebration. On Oregon Live, I think I wrote, we backordered some for like a week. I wrote and just saved them. I had like 50 or 60 stories during the early signing period on that day. I mean, that many. And then this time around, it was like 5 or 6. It was just kind of putting a bow on things. But a phenomenal job overall by the Oregon Ducks. They signed the 22. They had 22 verbal commitments during the early signing period and signed all 22. As much as everybody makes a big deal about Oregon's flash, about Oregon's ability, the throne room. By the way, in the second segment, we have a taped interview with Coach Keith Hayward, the co-defensive coordinator of the Oregon Ducks. We ask him about Kayvon Thibodeau's recruitment, and we ask him about that throne room. They have the throne room. They've got all the flash and pizzazz, but there's that factor that Oregon has that's also extremely efficient. Signing 22 of 22 prospects during the early signing period. Extremely efficient. Resetting the board after the early signing period and saying, who's left? What do we need to go get? That takes real effort. I don't think people realize that after that early signing period, coaches don't, you know, they haven't had a lot of experience with that. There's only been an early signing period for 2 years. So to efficiently regroup as a staff, get together and say, okay, who signed and who's left? And then say, okay, these are the guys that are left. Who can we go get and what are our needs? And to go out and attack those positions and go out and attack those guys, it is difficult to do. And it is difficult to do in an efficient way. If you don't do it right, you end up finishing with guys that are much lower than the rest of your class because you don't know how to identify the talent or where to identify the talent or, you know, yeah, we like this guy. You go and talk to him and it's like, I'm not going to the Pac-12. But that didn't happen with Oregon. They closed really strong. And I know they're not highly rated guys necessarily, but man, oh man, they did a good job. They needed a center. They wanted a center. They got Logan Sagapolu, one of the top 5 or 6 centers in the entire country. And I don't know if you saw this on social media. Logan Sagapolu was supposed to go in and sign out of Utah. He was supposed to go in and sign his national letter of intent, and it snowed just buckets in Utah. And so he went out to sign his letter of intent with his family to go to the ceremony, and his car was snowed in. So his parents took a video of him with a shovel trying to shovel the car out of the driveway so that they could get there to sign his letter of intent. Not a big deal necessarily with him. He's going on a 2-year mission, an LDS mission, so he won't be a part of things until the class of 2021. But a nice get. They wanted a center. They went ahead and got one. They wanted 2 defensive backs. They get Jamal Hill, the 3-star safety. I really like his athleticism. He runs a sub-1100 meter. He's fast. But he was a big-time recruit as a sophomore. Had an offer from Alabama. And then he kind of petered out in his high school career. Still a 3-star prospect. But for a little while there, it looked like he could be a big-time prospect. Big-time prospect. A national recruit. So you take a flyer on him, and he's a boomer bust guy. He's got all the athleticism in the world, got nice length. If you can turn him back into and put him back on the track of what he was as a sophomore, you got yourselves a steal. But DJ James, and I know they added another player, but DJ James is one of the more exciting additions in this class in this sense. His recruitment came down to the last second. 3-star cornerback DJ James. I don't know if people saw this. This is another nice little social media nugget on Twitter. DJ James went to his recruiting ceremony to sign with Oregon. He's all set to sign with Oregon. He's at his high school. He's ready to go. His family's there. He's all excited. And he gets a phone call. And this is all on video because the news is there. And so instead they end up kind of filming this little mini feature of his last few moments before he announces his decision. And it's Alabama. Alabama didn't get a guy they thought they were going to get, or they lost the guy. And they gave him a call and said, hey, you're in the heart of SEC country. We really like your film. He's 6'1", 185, you know, 190. We want you to come here. Well, for a kid from the South, that is the offer. So he had a decision to make. And he stuck with the Oregon Ducks. DJ James, a lot of schools did the reset after the early signing period, and everybody went after DJ James. He had at least one program from every Power 5 conference school coming after him. And the Oregon Ducks got him. Not a name we heard all year. But the Oregon staff hits the reset button at the early signing period and said, this kid's one of the best kids in the country that's still left. Let's go after him. And because they identified that early, rather than, you know, Alabama's Alabama, but Alabama identified him late. They made that late call. Oregon got on him early. They identified him early as a guy who might want to leave the South and come and play out in the Pac-12. They got on him, built the relationship quickly. That is really efficient. That's just efficient. And then on signing day, they add 4-star defensive tackle Christian Williams. Tennessee made a late push for him, and he ends up picking Oregon. And when we look at this, everybody talks about Oregon's class, number 7 in the nation, number 6 in the nation on ESPN. Everybody talks about Kayvon Thibodeau. Everybody wants to talk about the receivers they brought in. Everybody wants to talk about Mace Funa, Michael Wright. Big-time prospects. I get it. The headliners, right? Sean Dollar's the number 2 all-purpose back in the entire country. I hear all that. Those are all exceptional football players. But if you want to talk about an underappreciated area where Oregon did a phenomenal job, how about the defensive tackle position? It is hard. It is hard to find defensive tackles on the West Coast. They are not a dime a dozen. They are in the South. They're much easier to find in the South. They're tough to find on the West Coast. Oregon signed 3 defensive tackles, and all 3 of them are a 4-star prospect and a top 20 defensive tackle in the country on at least one site, one of the recruiting sites. On top of that, all of them had big-time offers. Suava Poti and Keon Ware-Hudson were the guys they got early, and both of them had major injury issues early. And when you look at this Cali flock, again, we're talking about underappreciated position being defensive tackle. One of the underappreciated stories in this class is Oregon's recruitment of Keon Ware-Hudson. I talked to you about the flash, but there's more. It's about the substance. It's about being able to go out and get these kids and identify kids and sign 22 of 22 during the early signing period. One of the underreported stories is Oregon's treatment of Keon Ware-Hudson. Keon Ware-Hudson was one of the top defensive tackles in the entire country at a modern day, had offers from all over the place. As a sophomore. Big time kid. Hurts his knee, tears his ACL as a junior, and he's out for the whole year, and his recruitment just kind of falls off a cliff. And Keon's talked about this. I think he's been on the show and talked about it earlier when he committed. And he said every school backed off of him. Every school backed off. In terms of recruitment, they checked in every once in a while. How you doing? The only school that really stuck with him all the way through, the only school that really kept that relationship going and we believe in you, was Oregon. Oregon was the only school. Again, efficiency. It's not just flash. It's the little details. Oregon stuck with him. He committed to Oregon and said, I'm not going to be the only one. I'm going to bring some teammates with me. Well, what happened? Sean Dollars and Jeremiah Crudell committed. Now, Crudell ended up at Oklahoma, but they got Crudell. That led to, you know, they end up getting Mace Funa, and that gets the ball rolling, and suddenly this Cali flock is dominant. And when you look at that map that came out today, it had a breakdown of who won each state in the country. Oregon wins Oregon. Good job. You get a couple of kids there and you feel good about that. But the biggest thing is Oregon, not USC, not UCLA, not Michigan, not Ohio State. They've done a good job in California. Oregon wins the state of California this year. We talk about little details and efficiency. That's a big detail. Being able to go into California and win the state of California against USC, that's huge. It's huge. Oregon did just an absolutely phenomenal job. And I think the thing that stands out to me most in the transition from the early signing period to the late signing period is Oregon's ability to reset their board and go and attack. They landed a top 20 defensive tackle in the country from Tennessee. They took him out of the SEC country. Tennessee wanted the kid. Tennessee wanted to host the kid. Tennessee wanted him to commit. They took a top 20 defensive tackle out of the state of Tennessee, and Tennessee wanted him. And they built that relationship in a matter of weeks. They took DJ James out of Alabama. Alabama called him right before he signed and said, man, we missed the boat on a couple kids. We really want you. And Oregon got him. And it's not like this staff's been together this whole time. They've lost some guys on this staff. And another attention to detail piece. Again, flash all over the place. Everybody pays attention to that. A detail piece. One of the things Cristobal did, and it was really smart, because this staff is a lot of guys who want to move up. Coach Hayward wants to move up. Coach Levitt's obviously looking for head coaching jobs. Coach Arroyo's not normally from the state of Oregon. He could want to move on at some point. They have a number of guys on this staff who might potentially move on. Coach Mike Johnson did move on. So one of the ways that Cristobal tried to take care of that, he assigned at least two and often three coaches, including himself, to every kid Oregon recruited. So while other, and teams are starting to catch up to this, other teams are starting to do this, but Oregon's very much on the cutting edge of that, of saying, listen, we might, you know, Cristobal, I'm sure internally is going, I might lose some of these guys. So what we're going to do to make sure that if we sign wide receivers, I don't just want my wide receiver coach going after them. We're going to have the wide receiver coach, the offensive coordinator, and me recruiting them all at the same time. And because of that, when a guy like Michael Johnson leaves as the wide receiver coach, you have two other coaches they built a relationship with. When Court Dennison, the outside linebackers coach, leaves for Louisville, and Coach Field, the recruiting coordinator, leaves for Louisville, you don't have panic time. Nobody goes, oh no, that was my main guy. That's the only guy I knew there. That's the only guy I was comfortable with there. You go, okay, well, I know two other coaches. It seems like a little thing, but it made a huge difference. And Oregon's efficiency in these last few weeks is part of the reason that they didn't slide to that 10-11 spot and stayed in that top 10. They signed 22 of 22. We don't have to worry about losing any of those guys after the early signing period. Who are the five or six targets we really like and really want that we think we can get? Anybody got some names? Throw them out. Let's go. Okay, these guys. All right. You two coaches, you take them. You two coaches, you take him. And they went out and stole players. Stole players. Two really quality players from the heart of SEC country when that program within that state, the big program, Tennessee and Alabama, wanted the Tennessee and Alabama prospect. A phenomenal job by this Oregon Ducks coaching staff. 1080 had exclusive coverage and audio opportunity of Oregon's signing day ceremony at Nike World Headquarters. Pretty cool event. They opened a ton of bottles of wine. They had a bunch of boosters and fans come on in. Former players were there. Eric Armstead, Kenyon Barner. There were 15 to 20 players there. Phil Knight was there. Mario Cristobal was there. And co-defensive coordinator Keith Hayward was there. And Dusty Hera, who does Dusty and Cam from 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday here on 1080 The Fan. Dusty and I got a chance to interview Coach Hayward about the recruitment of Kayvon Thibodeau, about the throne room, and about dressing up dads in uniform during official visits. We ask him about all of that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Dusty Hera and I got a chance to go to Oregon's signing day ceremony last night to do some interviews, and we had a chance to talk to co-defensive coordinator Keith Hayward about the recruitment of Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one high school prospect in the nation, Oregon's big throne room, and dressing up dads in uniform during official visits. We talk all of that here now.
All right. Joining us now is co-defensive coordinator for the Oregon Ducks, Keith Hayward. Coach, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. Very good.
You know, this is kind of the culmination of not just months, but literally years of work of coming into the class of 2019. you were such a key piece in signing the nation's number one recruit, Kayvon Thibodeau, here to U of O. Can you talk about kind of the reward on signing day and it finally being all done and having this class intact?
Well, we like you said, it's been years, particularly with him, because I had been going by a school previously when he was at Dorsey High School, and then just seeing him, observing him work out, and that's, you know, where we first met before he got to Oaks Christian. So, I mean, I'm excited for our fans to get to see him play. I get to coach him and watch him every day, but it's been great, you know, and to have the number one class in the Pac-12 and one of the best classes that Oregon has ever seen. I mean, I'm just excited to see the guys play and for us to put a good product out there on the field.
You know, when you see a kid like him, when you're walking through the halls of Dorsey High, are you going, wait a minute, who's that? You know, who's that freshman there walking down the hall? When do you know, kind of in building these relationships with coaches, that they're sending you a special kid your way?
You kind of learn that, you know, just over time, and you know, the relationships that you have with the coaches to understand when they're telling you about a kid, you know, what that coach means, when that, you know, because some people say every kid's a D1 athlete, but I mean, Kayvon stood out from day one, you know, just the way he looked, and you could tell how other people gravitated towards him, and I mean, he's just exceptional, and I'm just proud of, you know, the person that he is.
You guys signed 22 during the early signing period, and that's a relatively new thing, 2 years of that, an early signing period and a late signing period. I think one of the underreported stories and one of the credits to you guys is your ability to regroup after that early signing period, say, who's still left out there in the country, build those relationships, and finish the way you did. You got a couple of DBs that are really talented kids out of the SEC. DJ James got a phone call from Alabama today trying to pull him away from you guys. You also landed Christian Williams, the four-star defensive tackle out of Tennessee. What is that process like after the early signing period where you go, okay, guys, who's left, who do we want to go get, and how do you start that, building that relationship to have what you guys had today, which was a great finish on a really good recruiting class?
Yeah, you know, after the first signing period, you know, we kind of address, you know, look at it, it's like, okay, what else do we need? What else didn't we not get done? A credit to just the entire staff, because we recruit each athlete with the full staff. So, you know, it starts with the kid, gets to the parents, recruiting the coaches, because it takes them all, so that way you can build such strong relationships to ward off in Alabama, especially when he's right down there in SEC country, you know, and you got to kind of put, everybody's got to, like, put that fence around him. You know, and then, you know, those guys come up, and our players do a great job hosting the young men when they come to campus. And we just show them that we're going to mentor them, we're going to teach them, we're going to develop them, and, you know, that's pretty much it.
It wasn't that long ago, I think 2 or 3 years ago, that Oregon didn't land a top 40 kid in California. This year, I think you landed 7 of the top 17, according to Rivals. Throw out the rankings, you landed 7 really elite kids who had offers from all over the country. What changed in Oregon's approach in California? Some of it had to have been connections, but what was it about Oregon's push in California that this Cali flock came together?
Yeah, you know, I can't speak on what happened prior to us getting there, but what I'd say is we know we have great relationships there. And, you know, it just comes down to being genuine, identifying, and, you know, putting a focus there, because you got to be there in order to get the young men. And I mean, that's what it is. You know, I mean, we spend a lot of time really talking to these young men and just developing those relationships. And that's the key, because no mother or father is going to allow their son to go anywhere without their blessing and feeling like they're going to take care of their son.
You know, one thing is, we talk about the Kayvons. The 4 and 5 star guys are great, but, you know, you guys have built a secondary in of tacticians, right? Being technically sound. What do you look for when you're recruiting a kid that to play in your secondary or in your defensive scheme?
Yeah, no, I think the most important thing is, you know, they got to have the ability, which that's where you have to start off at. And then we look at a lot of different things in skill set, ball skills. Does he play on defense? Talk to him a lot on the phone, try to find out just their personality. You know, looking for, you know, just fluid hips and tackling and just all the – everybody's looking for the same thing.
Right.
But, you know, you got to have, you know, certain guys to be able to, you know, have an elite defense in this conference with all the great quarterbacks and great receivers.
an official visit is about obviously building the relationship, seeing guys face-to-face, making sure they fit the culture. But there's also that element of, like, the photo shoots now and the throne room. How does the throne room come together, and what are the kids' reactions and the parents' reactions when you take them into that throne room and show them that king's cape, the fur cape with the green velvet? It's pretty impressive in pictures.
Yeah, they love it, you know. The whole idea is just to, you know, build energy. You know, I mean, no one's going to get anything or nothing's going to happen if you're just dry and quiet. So we just build up the excitement. I mean, you know, we have, you know, great facilities and, you know, a lot of uniforms, and we have those accessories. So why not use them? That's what these young men are attracted to.
That catches the eye. Photo edits catch the eye. At the end of the day, though, it's about relationships. And one of the things Oregon does that is different, and other teams are starting to catch on, but you guys are right now kind of ahead of the curve there. You have so many different coaches that build a really personal relationship. Where did that come from? How did that develop? And do you ever step on each other's toes with, oh, I called that kid today and talked to him? Or does it just kind of happen organically when you build a relationship with the young man?
It just happens organically. I mean, if a young man could have Kale Millen spoke earlier, and he said that, you know, he spoke to all the coaches on the staff. I mean, that's how you really build relationships, you know. And then you have to be genuine. You can't just have a cookie-cutter text or conversation, you know. So I think we do a good job of uncovering, you know, just anything that we can, you know, about these young men, find out what their interests truly are, and the parents and what they do and birthdays. And
you know, that's one of the things, though, is that – We kind of lose sight of it as you get older, and I think some coaches lose sight of it as this is the biggest thing in their lives to this point is this recruiting. And to make it exciting and to make it an event, I mean, that's what they're looking for, because they haven't had anything this big. They haven't been married or haven't had kids or even graduated yet. So this is like the big event that they've been looking forward to, and making it that event is something that I guess is the big difference between what you guys are doing and what everybody else is at this point.
Absolutely. Right? Like Andrew said, I mean, everybody's catching up, and, you know, word travels fast about what we do. So you always got to try to find out ways of how you can appeal a little bit differently or more. And then you can't do the same thing with everybody. I mean, some young men, they come in there, and, yes, it looks great. You know, they're doing a photo shoot, but some of them shy away from it a little bit. So you got to find a different way to connect.
You know, we've talked about the green lights and what you like, and as far as from an athletic standpoint and a personality. What are some of the red flags when you're recruiting a kid and you're like, okay, now I'm going to kind of pull off, because there's a lot of 4- and 5-star kids that just may not be right for the University of Oregon. Is there something that you guys look for in a guy that if you maybe see it, you'll kind of back off and be a little bit more hesitant?
You know, I'll say this, you know, our players host these guys, and they get around the guys, and just as much as, you know, we're checking the players, you know, checking out this recruit, our players are checking them out to make sure that they're right fit also. You know, I think that's key, because, you know, they know sometimes they'll come back to us and be like, you know, hey, coach, you know, not sure about this guy or this happened, you know, because it's awesome to have a great player, but you want to also surround yourself around great people.
One of the trends in recruiting right now on visits is putting dad in a uniform.
Yeah.
Devel Winters on social media claims that he is the founder, the creator of putting dad in a uniform. First of all, thoughts on that? Is he right? Is he the founder, the creator of that concept? And what do you think of putting dads in a uniform? It's got to be a snug fit occasionally.
You know, he did mention that to me, that he did it, I don't know where he was at, Pitt or whatever, but I think it's awesome. I mean, then again, you know, I mean, the parents, make them part of the process. You have to. And I think it's funny, and whether it's a snug fit or a loose fit, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's all fun. And you give them a memory also, because, you know, unless they have multiple sons or even a daughter or whatever that's going to go through a recruiting process, you know, they may not get to do it again.
Was there a personal recruit or a commitment that really you bonded with at a different level, a higher level, where you really got to know the kid and felt like you personally had a special connection with a young man that committed in this recruiting class?
You know, Sean Dollars and I, because we have extensive conversations, and I remember when we first offered him some time ago, like he and I just bonded, and, you know, we always talk, and, you know, I think he has aspirations of maybe one day being a coach, and he's just like, coach, you know, I really like how, you know, how you live and how you carry yourself. That's very inspirational, and his mother shared that to me also. So, I mean, But, all these young men are special. And, like I said, we build a lot of different relationships with each of these guys. And I'm just grateful that I'm in this position to go out there and us as a staff to impact these young men's life and allow them to live out their dreams athletically and academically. Because without this platform, I don't know what I'll be doing, but I love what I'm doing. It's just the relationship part of it that really gets me.
Well, it shows. I mean, you guys have had the results, and this is a phenomenal class, and you've done an absolutely phenomenal job this year. When I talk to the kids, you are one of the guys that they immediately mention as a big-time influence. So you've done a phenomenal job, and enjoy tonight because you guys have earned it.
Yep, appreciate you guys.
All right, Coach, thank you very much. You got about 700 fans that you guys need to entertain tonight, so thank you very much for the time, and congratulations on a great recruiting class.
Thank you, fellas. Go Ducks.
Wanted to give people a little behind the scenes, and I think that was Dusty and I's main goal, not so much to ask about the kids individually. And Mario Cristobal kind of touched on that both in the early and late signing day news conference. I wanted to ask some questions that had to do with how the process works. And I think involving the parents is one thing Oregon does that's a real successful pitch. I think the fact that multiple coaches are involved in a recruitment is a little different. I think other schools are starting to do that, but it takes a lot of work. You have to have total buy-in of the whole coaching staff, and you have to trust each other because you can't be telling the kid two different messages about how he fits, what position he'll play, how his personality fits with the roster. You have to be all on the same page and communicate. Oregon staff in a very short period of time, haven't been together very long, have been able to do that. Got to talk about Oregon State. We also have to talk about the Pac-12. How did Oregon State do? How did they finish? They landed two new commitments, and I actually liked both of their commitments they added on signing day. And how did the Pac-12 play out? It was ugly for the LA schools. We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
The Oregon State Beavers finished last in the Pac-12 on 24/7 Sports and Rivals. It was highly critical of the performance by Jonathan Smith and his staff in an article, in a column I wrote on Oregon Live. And you know, it needs to be reality check time here a little bit for Oregon State fan. And I know a lot of Oregon State fans are really upset with me for being critical. And I'm just sort of baffled by that. Oregon State finished 12th in the Pac-12 conference. They finished second to last among Power 5 conference teams of their 19-man traditional class, high school and JC guys. They only landed five or six, I think, that had another FBS Power 5 conference offer. In other words, the vast majority of this recruiting class had offers from mid-majors and FCS programs. They closed out the class with a number of kids who either only had one offer from Oregon State or chose Oregon State over an FCS school. And for people who don't know, the FCS is the lower level, the Montana, Portland State level. If that's acceptable to you and you think that's a great job or you think I'm being overly harsh in saying that Oregon State needs to do a better job than beating out Portland State for kids, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. I guess you can be mad at the messenger, but at some point you have to say what's going on and what's wrong here. And I know winning games is part of it, but there's a bigger issue here. And Coach Smith had a chance to and did respond to what I wrote and said, I'm not worried about the rankings. I want to pick my own groceries. And that sounds good. And it sounds like what he's saying is, I don't pay attention to the recruiting rankings. We go with guys that fit our system. Well, according to 24/7 Sports, they offered 22 wide receivers. They landed zero. They offered double-digit quarterbacks. They landed zero. I know that they offered a few dozen offensive linemen. They had to go way down their board to get any. What Jonathan Smith actually did is went to the grocery store, went to the oranges, picked one up, and USC pulled it out of his hand. Picked up another one. Washington pulled it out of his hand. Oregon pulled it out of his hand. And by the time he got to the 15th orange, he got to put it in the cart. So yes, he put the oranges in the cart, but the ones he picked went elsewhere. Oregon State didn't handpick their groceries. they went way down their board. Alabama picks their own groceries. This year in California, Oregon pick their own groceries. This year, Oregon State got what was left after everyone else got to go grocery shopping. To say that you picked your own groceries is just disingenuous. And they know it. Here's the thing. They definitely are going to go into a coaching meeting behind closed doors and say, this did not go well. They know it didn't go well. You can't recruit and offer 22 different wide receivers and go 0 for 22 at wide receiver and say, hey guys, really good job. Really good job. We cleaned up. They know. They know. He'd be better off just saying, you know what? We're really happy with the guys we got, but 12th is not where we want to be. And it doesn't matter whether we think the rankings are accurate or not. We want to be better than last in the Pac-12. We're better than that. And we're going to be better than that. John Wilner wrote an article of the rising and falling. Who was rising and who was falling in the Pac-12? He said, I'm not going to editorialize this. I don't know his exact words, but he said, I'm not going to put a positive spin on this. I'm not going to put, I'm not going to be neutral here. I'm not going to put a negative spin on this. Oregon State was listed as falling and said, basically, don't worry about the kids that they signed. Worry about the transfers. Because that's what's going to matter. Because these kids, the kids they got, are not going to be ready to play right away. They got a lot of guys who are redshirt guys who need to gain some weight, who need to get bigger, and could develop. And by the way, this coaching staff is really, really good at developing talent. I'm not taking that away from Coach Smith and his guys. They're really good. Offensively, they were creative this year. They did some really good things. And they did a nice job in the state of Oregon. Kids went from kind of like, Oregon State, as far as the local kids, to getting a number of them. They got a number of them in the state of Oregon. They did a nice job in the state of Oregon. The message didn't land outside of Oregon. So what is it? Because if it's just wins, then maybe I am picking on them. If it's just a matter of winning games and they'll be fine, then I am picking on them. But it's not. Coach Jonathan Smith has taken, because he's not a real comfortable recruiter. There are guys who love recruiting. Mario Cristobal loves recruiting, right? Kirby Smart loves recruiting. Nick Saban doesn't love recruiting. He likes other guys to do his recruiting. There are coaches that really like recruiting. Bill Belichick would not be a guy that liked recruiting. Chip Kelly does not like recruiting. X's and O's guys. Here's what I want. Staff, go find guys that I want. I'll plug them in. We'll play them, and that'll work. They're not the guy that wants to go out and recruit. And Coach Smith doesn't want to. And Coach Helfrich didn't want to. And what both those guys have done, and Helfrich did it with Kelly, Coach Smith did it with Peterson, they both kind of uncomfortably wear the suit of someone they've seen do it. Mark Helfrich struggled to recruit at Oregon because he was doing a bad impression of Chip Kelly. And right now, Jonathan Smith is doing a bad impression of Coach Peterson. Coach Peterson treats a Washington offer like it's sacred. It's a big deal to get a Washington offer. Because in the last few years, they've been the premier program in the Pac-12. So everybody else can send out 200, 300 offers in a recruiting class. We're going to send out 110, maybe, the whole year. And we're going to pick and choose, and you got to earn an offer from us because it's Washington. We're a high academic institution, and we win. You want an offer from us? You want to fit our system? You have to earn it. And you can say that works or doesn't work for Washington. They've got a top 20 recruiting class. They're doing a nice job. So it works for Washington. They've got the sacred offer, right? Because it really is an asset. An offer from Washington in the state of Washington, the state of California, that's a big deal. They're a good program. Oregon State can't do the same thing, and they did. There's a class of 2020 running back linebacker named Sam Adams. Sam Adams, a big-time athlete, good running back, good linebacker, now has offers from the entire country. Early in his recruitment, he liked Oregon State a lot, and he was looking to get an offer. He paid on his own dime. His dad played in the NFL, so they could definitely afford it. His dad played in the NFL, was a three-time Pro Bowler, defensive tackle for the Ravens and Seahawks. He went down twice to Corvallis on his own dime, hoping for an offer. But Oregon State did the elusive offer slow play thing. So he left empty-handed twice. Sam Adams now has offers from almost everybody in the country. And I know, having spoken to the family, that it was like, Oregon State kind of waited too long. If they'd have offered first, it would have been exciting. We'd have been really excited about it because that would have been his first big offer. But instead, they waited until after a bunch of big-time schools had offered. And then it's like Oregon State says, well, here, you're finally ready for your Oregon State offer. Well, I'm already hearing from Michigan and Texas and Florida and Florida State and Oregon and USC. That, I mean, at that point, the excitement over the Oregon State offer is gone. So he's doing a Chris Peterson impression with the elusive Oregon State offer. And then, and I thought this was common knowledge, and it seems that it's not. Jonathan Smith did not hire his own recruiting staff. He kept Gary Anderson's. And Oregon State fans, and I actually think Gary Anderson did an okay job at recruiting at times. I don't know that he necessarily managed the roster very well. I think he rubbed a lot of kids the wrong way, including Marcus McMarion. But I do think at times they identified talent at a pretty decent level. Oregon State fans don't feel that way. They feel like Gary Anderson got him into this predicament with bad recruiting, in part, and bad roster management. But Coach Smith didn't bring in his own recruiting staff. He didn't bring in his own recruiting coordinator. He didn't bring in his own director of player personnel. He kept Gary Anderson's guys. When you're doing an impression of another coach, so he's doing a Chris Peterson impression with Gary Anderson's recruiting staff. Now, obviously, his assistants go out and recruit. Not taking that away from anybody. His assistants do a lot of recruiting. But recruiting coordinators are really involved in a recruitment. They help set up your visit, and while the coaches are all out coaching during games and kids are on their official visit, it's kind of the recruiting coordinator's job to set up and make sure that stuff all goes smoothly. I don't know if Oregon State fan realizes that Gary Anderson's staff is still doing the recruiting at Oregon State. If that's okay with Oregon State fan, fine. But you know what tells me a coach doesn't have a plan? When he doesn't bring in his own recruiters. If you are comfortable, when a big-time recruiting coach comes in or a coach that's real comfortable with recruiting comes in, they bring in recruiters because it's like, here's our message. You come in and you deliver our message. This is our message. You're my guy. This is what we do. So far, Coach Smith, first-time coach, still feeling it out, and I think he's got a really bright future. But I don't think he had a plan for recruiting. I know he didn't. And the reason I know he didn't is because he didn't bring in his own recruiting staff, and he's kind of doing the elusive offer thing at Oregon State. If I'm Oregon State, I bring in a high-energy recruiting coordinator. I go high-energy with recruiting. I'm flashy. I'm exciting with my recruiting. And I offer every kid first. When you go through the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, who Oregon State has gotten that ended up being a big-time recruit that had offers from all over, Oregon State's offered first. Oregon State offered Trevon Bradford first. Oregon State offered, and it didn't work out, but they offered Jake Ducart first. Oregon State was the first to offer Luke Musgrave. He got an offer from Oregon, and he ended up being a 4-star recruit and stuck with Oregon State. When Oregon State's had success and been able to land that big-name guy, they've offered first. And what happens when a kid gets his first Pac-12 or first Power 5 conference offer? I'll tell you. Because it just happened with Keith Brown, the class of 2021 Lebanon linebacker. Oregon State offered first. And I'm not saying this is what happened with it. He was excited. He called it the best moment of his life. He's excited about Oregon State. He took a visit to Oregon State. He's now on a national radar. He went to an All-American combine and blew up. Rivals and 24/7 considered him maybe arguably the breakout player nationally at that combine. You know where he visited recently? Oregon State. Why? They offered first. He's excited. So when he blows up, and it is inevitable, he picked up an offer from Oregon. He's going to get offers from USC, Texas, Oklahoma. He's going to get offers from all over the country. You know who's still in it? Because they offered first the whole way through? Oregon State. You can't do the exclusive, we're going to wait, slow play because our offer's elusive. Oregon did it with Helfrich, and it didn't work. Jonathan Smith's trying to do it. And it's not going to work. And not only that, but he's doing it with recruiting coordinators that are Gary Anderson's guys. He's got to get guys that are excited about doing it. He's got to get his own guys, and he's got to have a different message because what works at Washington isn't necessarily going to work at Oregon State. And I think he's a really good coach, but I think he's a first-time coach, and every first-time coach has their peaks and valleys. His peak, he's a pretty dang good offensive mind. I think he calls more innovative stuff than Oregon does a lot of the time. his valley? He's not a comfortable recruiter. Not a comfortable recruiter. So he needs guys on his staff that can recruit. And it'll get better if he does it. But he's got to recognize it, and he's got to fix it. He's not the only one. Oregon State's not the only one that had a rough recruiting cycle. The LA schools, oh boy, the LA schools had an abysmal finish. We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
The state of California should be a lay-in for UCLA and USC. It is almost a gimme for UCLA and USC to finish with top 25 classes. It's just kind of a slam dunk. There's so much talent there. You're in your own backyard. A lot of guys like to settle there after their career, so they've had kids who then also want to go to USC. It's easy to recruit to USC and UCLA, unless you're Clay Helton and Chip Kelly. USC finished with its lowest rated recruiting class in the history of recruiting rankings. By the way, the class still finished, I'm looking through it, 18th on 24/7 and 18th on Rivals. So still a top 20 class. That class would be a top 10 class, top five class all time for Oregon. I mean, that's how easy it is for them to recruit at a high level. They do a good job for the most part. This class was a nightmare. Finishing 18th. So bad was this recruiting class. They landed the number one athlete. He was the national player of the year at the All-American Bowl. He enrolled at USC early, and it was a slam dunk he was going to USC. Brew McCoy, the five-star athlete, was going to USC. There was no drama to it. I know people tried to throw out, maybe he'd consider going to Oregon. He's from modern day, and Oregon's got some... No. He was going to USC. There was no chance he'd go anywhere else. He enrolled early, started classes. He moved in and lived at USC for 3 weeks. Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator, leaves for the Arizona Cardinals. They don't hire anybody right away, and Brew McCoy leaves and enrolls at Texas. Can you imagine mishandling a recruitment? Imagine... We'll put it in Oregon context because it's the five-star prospect. Imagine if Kayvon Thibodeau showed up at Oregon in January and then the defensive coordinator, like Jim Leavitt, were to take the guy. Jim Leavitt's still at Oregon. But if Jim Leavitt were to leave and he leaves after 3 weeks, Kayvon Thibodeau just walks out of Oregon like, never mind. That's how big a deal this was. It's unbelievable. Rivals literally made a new rule for its recruiting class rankings, because the rule always was if a guy early enrolls, he counts. Because what would happen is guys would sign and then, you know, not make it because of academics and all that stuff. And Rivals doesn't go back, and 24/7, they don't go back and re-rank. You get what you get based on when they sign, and once they sign, they count. But in this instance, for the first time ever, they had to pull him off USC's list and add him to Texas's. And then UCLA somehow did worse. I think Marcus Greaves know exactly why they did worse. Marcus Greaves, the producer, was a recruit for a long time, played at Oregon State, had a run-in with Chip Kelly, and it was not a good experience. He's talked about it on the show, that Chip Kelly, like, hey, you want to commit, when he was on a visit? No. Okay, well, we'll just find another guy. And I think Chip Kelly might still be doing that, because UCLA finished 43rd, according to 24/7 Sports, and 46th, according to Rivals. They finished outside the top 40. So bad was it at UCLA that Drew Fowler, a three-star linebacker from Bellevue, had scholarship offers to UCLA and Oregon State. He turned them down and committed to Washington as a walk-on. So he'd rather pay for college than go to UCLA or Oregon State. Chip Kelly... Again, if you're an X's and O's guy, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's great to be an X's and O's guy. Bill Belichick's an X's and O's guy. Sean McVay's an X's and O's guy. Andy Reid's an X's and O's guy. But if you're going to be that guy, you have to be self-aware enough to say, what am I not? What do I not bring to the table? I need to fill out my staff with the things I'm not so we cover all our bases. UCLA also now has a gimmick because their hashtag is 8-clap. I think it's called 8-clap 8th. Have you seen this on social media, Marcus?
No.
You're going to lose your mind. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. UCLA now only wants to offer kids on the 8th of every month. So what's going to happen when a kid takes an unofficial visit on his own dime on the 24th? Takes an official visit or an unofficial visit on his own dime, hoping to get an offer. It's like, hey, we really like you. Don't tweet this out or anything, but we're going to give you a call right around the 8th next month. There's an energy to official visits. There's an energy to unofficial visits. Can you imagine waiting until the 8th of every month to pull the trigger with a kid?
Absolutely not. I would say, nope. I would already tell my mom, I'd be like, I am not going there.
Seriously, that's UCLA's new gimmick. At least it's a gimmick. At least they're trying something. But things that are not going to work for 100, Alex, there's no way. I mean, you can't go on an in-home visit. You can't go on a school visit and visit a kid. And what ends up happening sometimes, you go into a big-time school, and Coach Hayward talked about that in the second segment. When he went to Dorsey and you see this kid walking through the halls as a freshman, it was Kayvon Thibodeau, and you're like, who is this kid? Oh, my goodness, he's a monster. And you want to offer him right away. So you build that, you ask the coach, is he good enough? Yeah, he's good enough. Okay, Howard's grades, great. Okay, we're going to offer him. Can you imagine telling that coach, like, I know I'm here, I know I can meet the kid, but I'm going to wait. Oh, gosh, it's the 9th. Can I call you in 29 days? It's ridiculous. It makes no sense. The Pac-12 had a really rough day. The Pac-12 had a really rough day and a really rough signing period. Only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Pac-12 schools finished in the top 40 in the recruiting rankings, tied for the lowest of any Power 5 conference program. They've got to get better. And it's like, it's one of those things like a catch-22. They haven't won in the College Bowl playoff. So because they haven't been winning, kids don't want to go there. And when kids don't want to go there, they can't win. So it's this vicious cycle right now, killing the Pac-12. Oregon got out of it, finishing 7th, got some SEC talent. USC needs to get out of it. And Washington, I think, did a nice job. Until the Pac-12 as a national title contender, this may be the recurring theme here. Until the Pac-12 network gets sorted out, this may be the recurring theme. Across the conference, recruiting is really, really down. Really down. Historically down. Oregon, as good as Oregon's class was, they were nowhere near competing for the number one spot, which went to Georgia. Georgia and Alabama right up there, 1-2. Nowhere near. So there was no Pac-12 team that competed at all for the recruiting national title. Oregon finishes top 10. No other Pac-12 school finished in the top 15. They've got to get better. They've got to get better. Schedule keeps jumping around a little bit here. We do Thursdays. We do Mondays. Next week, we are on Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Then the following 2 weeks, because of Duck basketball, we're Monday. So next week, 7 to 8 p.m. on 1080 The Fan. And then the next 2 weeks, it's Monday from 7 to 8. We will get back to our Thursday schedule after we get done with the basketball season. So next week, Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on 1080 The Fan. Thank you, as always, for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.